The most trusted and longest-running sports talk show in Tennessee. From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, this is Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Hines on Sports Radio WNML.
Sports Talk on this Monday afternoon with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. We have a lot coming your way today. We, of course, come out of the weekend, the third weekend without sports. And I know for some, perhaps it's become a little bit easier. For those, it's become more questions that they've got than answers. And we certainly wish the very best for those that are having some struggles and tough times. And we certainly hope to just be here for those that want to hang out for the next 4 hours as we're with you until 7. The Producing the Facts podcast will come your way from 7 until 8. At 8 o'clock tonight, it'll be Vol Calls. So, Jimmy Hyams, we look forward to being joined by Dr. Jerry Punch a little bit later this hour. Olympic medalist Bill Schmidt will join us at 4:35. At 5:05, Rob Lewis of VolQuest.com. We'll also have comments from Daryl Taylor as he, the VFL, joined Austin Price and Chris Lowe on The Nation last night. So if you didn't hear that conversation, we'll bring that to you. We've got that, our trivia challenge at the top of the hour at 6 o'clock. All that and more today on Sports Talk. How are you?
I'm doing well. I will say this. I want to compliment the folks in my neighborhood out in Houston Hills. Their yards are looking great.
Oh, yeah.
Fewer sports watching, more yard work. But, yeah, it's been an interesting time, but we do have a lot coming your way today. Hope that folks will enjoy the show. It never stops. We may not be – the sporting events may stop, but there's always news around sports, and that's what we intend to bring folks today.
Yeah, so we do look forward to it, and we will have a news update for you around 4:15 as Bob Yarborough will jump on board with us. And so we've got a lot coming your way today throughout the course of this afternoon.
We'll get to our news and notes brought to you by Image Matters, technology that you need, people you can trust. So the big news around the Olympics have been reset, and it's basically a year from what was to be the beginning of this year. So they have moved it to a start of July the 23rd. They will have the closing ceremony one day different from a year ago, August 8th instead of August 9th. And they feel like this is accelerates the process. They thought having the same date was a better way to go. I would agree with that. And one of the things they did decide recently was that anybody that's already qualified for the Olympics 2020 will be qualified for the Games in 2021. That's 6,200 athletes. I want to ask Bill Schmidt about that, because you could have people that qualified this past year, and yet a year from now they may not be quite as good a shape or might not be able to achieve what they did, but yet they're getting a pass. So that's an interesting move that is being made by the Olympic Committee, the IOC. So, and of course, there were a number of athletes, 11,000 total athletes that are competing. That leaves a whole lot of spots for those to try to win their way or earn their way into the games. All right, a few other notes out there. Running back Jalen Wright of North Carolina has picked Tennessee over Miami and Arizona State. John, that's an area that Brent Hubb's been talking about for a while. Tennessee needed to hit, and they do so with his running back.
Oh, I don't think there's any question that you're talking about, and we see more versatility. We know that Jeremy Pruitt likes it. He's brought in a couple of guys with that first class that also very, very accomplished at baseball. We saw two or three, I think, or at least a couple, that also have an interest in track from this most recent signing class. And here's somebody else. As you mentioned, he is a speedster and just can flat out pick him up and put him down. So he doesn't have a great rating next to his name, but I also think that, as his coach says, I mean, he is somebody who had 7 offers, including Miami, Arizona State, and Syracuse. He may not have a star rating next to his name, but his coach believes that folks are going to realize what kind of talent Tennessee has gotten in Jalen Wright.
Tennessee also, after a quarterback, they're targeting Tyler Beasley. He's out of Sarasota, Florida. He wants to visit Tennessee as soon as possible. Tennessee gave him his first FBS offer. That came on Sunday. He's 6'2", he's 185, he's a dual threat. As a junior, he threw for 1,234 yards and 12 touchdowns. He ran for 517 and 8 touchdowns. He has no ranking yet. He says that does not put a chip on his shoulder, but he does want to prove to folks what he can do. So Tennessee looking at Tyler Beasley, quarterback from Sarasota. Had a chance to learn a little bit more about E.J. Anasicki, who is committed to Tennessee. He's everyone knows pretty much that he is the brother of Nikki Anasicki, a former Lady Vol who won two national championships. He has worked out with Tennessee players the last couple of years because his sister lives in Knoxville. And he brings, I'm told, some of the same tenacity, competitiveness, and desire and physicality that his sister brought to the Lady Vols program. And quite frankly, I think some of that physicality and that nastiness was missed by the Tennessee team last year. So a welcome addition of Anasicki. Also, while you wouldn't necessarily expect 15.5 points to transfer from a smaller school to a bigger school, I'm told that when you can average over 11 rebounds a game, that translates. Now, it doesn't necessarily translate into 11.5 rebounds a game at Tennessee, but it should translate into somebody being a really good rebounder to help inside. Also, they could limit the minutes of John Fulkerson. He needs to go from, about 35 minutes to about 28, and if they can reduce that, I think he would be more productive per minute. I think there were times there were lulls in a game where he was asked to play too many minutes with the physicality of the SEC. So Anasicki, I think, a really nice addition to Tennessee. He actually wanted to come to Tennessee, I'm told, a year ago, but he didn't because he didn't want to sit out a year. So I think Tennessee got a good one in Anasicki. All right, a few other notes out there. Some sad news to pass along to you as well. Bobby Hebert Sr. passed away. His son, Bobby Hebert Jr., was a quarterback in Northwestern State, Louisiana, with the New Orleans Saints, with the Atlanta Falcons. He also has a radio show in New Orleans. He also was a teammate of Ed Orgeron. Bobby Hebert Jr. was a teammate of Ed Orgeron's in college, but the dad passing away. And also a former former LSU football track athlete, Orlando McDaniel, had a chance to cover him when he was at LSU. He was a pretty good football player. He was a great track athlete. He passed away from the coronavirus at 59. So two folks that with Louisiana ties passing away due to the coronavirus. And you've got McDaniel, by the way, had started a youth track club in North Texas where he was making an impact on younger folks. The NBA draft is still set for June the 25th. It's unlikely it's going to occur. If you read these articles, why? Well, one, they don't know the draft order. Secondly, they like to make trades during the draft. Well, you can't make a trade if you're right in the middle of the NBA season, which they figure to be. And you don't have any free agency situation involved with it. So don't expect the NBA draft to be held June the 25th, even though it's set for that. That, of course, is providing the NBA resumes its season, which it says that it will. Now, a number of NBA execs are taking 20% cut in pay, the top 100 executives. So the question is then raised, what does that mean for the players? Are they going to end up taking a cut in pay? I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how that one plays out. New York Knicks owner James Dolan is self-isolated because he has the virus. He is 64 years old. It was on Friday the news broke that ESPN's Doris Burke, also with the coronavirus. A few other notes to pass along to you. I thought this was interesting. I was reading an article. Oklahoma coach Lincoln Riley wants a level playing field for those teams that are looking to play this fall. He said that right now, he said he would like the NCAA to set some guidelines. He said that the ACC is having virtual meetings with coaches, that they're able to go to a weight room and have individual workouts. They're able to send equipment to their players. He said the ACC can do it, the Big 12 cannot. So he wants an equal playing field in regard to that. He said something else I thought was pretty interesting. He was asked, well, how much of a fall camp do you need to get your team ready? He said, about 20 days or so. Well, they actually get a little bit more than that right now. But he said about 20 days, that's all. Notre Dame coach Brian Kelly said he needed to start July the 1st. So a very different philosophy on what
just
it takes.
Just a little.
Yeah,
just
what
a little.
It takes a month, what it takes to get these players ready. John, my internet's been out. I don't know what the situation is. The NCAA was scheduled to vote today on whether to give an extra year to spring sports. Do you know if that has occurred yet?
I don't believe so. I believe that the conversation and everything starts at 4 this afternoon.
Okay. All right. Well, we will see what happens there. I do believe they're going to give an extra year to the spring sports. I don't believe they're going to give them to the winter sports, including basketball. I think they're going to go in a different direction in that regard. All right, top free agents in the NFL, one of them's Cam Newton. Stephen A. Smith of ESPN says a perfect fit for him would be the Chargers. Others think that as well. But you got Cam Newton, you got Jameis Winston, you got Jadeveon Clowney, three outstanding talents that have not found a home, two of them with health issues. And it may be delayed a while because until they can take physicals, I'm not sure teams want to take a chance on either Newton or Clowney. Also, a thumbs up to the NFL. They've raised collectively from players, owners, et cetera, about $35 million to fight the virus. And at Augusta National, they're donating $2 million for virus tests and relief efforts. So good for them to do that. I thought this was interesting. I saw a report where Tampa Bay folks are saying that Tom Brady actually made the pitch to them, made the sales pitch, and talked about why they should want him. And, of course, they did. But it was like he was courting Tampa Bay, not necessarily the reverse. They had one conversation that went positive. The next conversation, Brady was signing a contract. So I thought that was pretty interesting the way that played out. All right, if you would like to get season tickets and renew season tickets, I should say, for Tennessee football, that's going to go online on Thursday. It's going to be this week. I'll be curious to see what type of response they get. I've got a feeling there might be some wait and see, but we shall see. There were about 62,000 season tickets that were sold last year. You got Tennessee coming off an eight-win season. You got them coming off a Gator Bowl win. You got them coming off six wins in a row. So you've got them some momentum, you got some enthusiasm, but I just wonder with the COVID-19, how many people are going to jump on board to renew their season tickets. Again, they can start doing that online on Thursday. Pro Football Focus likes Justin Fields over Trevor Lawrence as a pro quarterback. Both project to be better than Tua Tagovailoa, Pro Football Focus says, but not as good as Joe Burrow. I thought this was interesting. Fields threw for 3,273 yards, Trevor Lawrence 3,655. Fields had 41 touchdowns to 3 interceptions, Lawrence 36 touchdowns to 8 interceptions. Now, this is the one that got me. Fields ran for 484 yards and 10 touchdowns. Lawrence ran for 563 yards and 9 touchdowns. Lawrence ran for almost 80 more yards than Fields. I wouldn't have never thought that. And one's considered dual threat and the other one's not. The one that's not ran for more yards, but I thought those numbers were pretty interesting. The Ryder Cup could be postponed a year. It is scheduled for September. It was postponed in 2001 because of 9-1-1, but there is a chance that that might happen again. But we're all in such a wait and see. I saw the other day where Kirk Herbstreit said that if I'm quoting him correctly, that he doesn't think there's going to be college football this fall. But how do you know? I mean, how is there any way to project that? I wouldn't dare go that far because I don't know enough about it. I don't know if this thing is going to subside a little bit when we get to warmer weather. It is not yet, obviously. But who knows what it's going to be like in mid-April? Who knows what it's going to be like May the 1st? Mm-hmm. I don't. And so I think it's interesting that somebody might say that. I will say this. It will have an incredibly negative impact on a lot of businesses and athletic departments. Football drives the train. It's the only money maker at schools other than men's basketball. Now, every now and then you'll find an outlier that might make some money in different sports, but typically football is the one that drives the train there. And if you don't have it, it'll be interesting to see the negative impact financially. Here's the other thing too. Let's say there's seven weekends a year where Tennessee's hosting a game in Knoxville. That benefits restaurants. It benefits hotels. It benefits just about everybody financially. It benefits shops that are selling souvenirs for Tennessee. So hopefully we'll have it, but I wouldn't dare suggest at this point that we won't because I just don't think there's any way to know. Anyway, we will see what happens in that regard. Hopefully we'll have it. Look forward to it. Hopefully we'll get back to some normalcy here pretty soon, but really, really hard to figure this thing out. So anyway, those are our news and notes brought to you by Image Matters.
That's Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. To join us on Sports Talk, 656-9900, 656-9900, star 990 is free for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. The toll-free number, 1-866-656-9900. We'll get a break and be back with more as you listen to Sports Talk on 99.1, The Sports Animal.
Because we have a transmitter, and you don't. 99.1, The Sports Animal.
Sports 656-9900 is how you join us. Star 990 is free for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. The toll-free number, 1-866-656-9900. That's how you join us on Sports Talk.
Jen, I was looking at a mock draft done by 247 Sports, and it's got five players from the SEC going in the first round. What's interesting is it's represented by five different SEC players. They've got Anthony Edwards going number one to Golden State. I just didn't think he was would be a number one pick, but there he is. And the other SEC players at number 13, Isaac Okoro, he would be the second player from the SEC taken. From Auburn, the number 13 spot. At number 15, Tyrese Maxey of Kentucky. At number 27 is Scotty Lewis of Florida. 27 is Scotty Lewis of Florida. 25, Aaron Nesmith of Vanderbilt. So those are the ones projected to go in the first round from the SEC. We'll see that there could be a number of changes along the way before we get to that. A couple of others to note. We'll go over the top five. Some of them. LaMelo Ball is going number two. And number three is James Wiseman, who played at Memphis for a few games, and then he had the issue with NCAA, and then he quit playing. At number four, his name is Okongwu. He is from Southern Cal. He is a freshman center who declared early for the NBA draft. And then Denny Ogdija, and he is a foreign player. So those are the top five. There are two players that were on that Washington team that Tennessee beat back in November. There were freshmen. Jaden McDaniels is targeted to go number nine in the draft, and Isaiah Stewart of Washington, number 22. And there are also two players from Florida State, a team that beat Tennessee. Devin Vassell is projected to go number 17. Patrick Williams of Florida State, number 26. So those two headed to the projected to be first-round picks in the NBA. There are a couple of them from Duke that are scheduled to be first-round or projected to be first-round picks. Vernon Carey at number 14 and Trey Jones at number 20. So those are the two players from Duke that are projected to go really high in the draft. There's a third one, Cassius Stanley, the 29th pick from Duke. As I glance through this quickly, I think Duke is the team that has the most that are expected to go in the first round. So that's a look at one of the mock drafts from 247. And, John, we were talking about how devastating college football, what it would be to college football if they didn't have it. It accounts for $6.5 billion in revenue. And I did see an article where they were talking about the amount of money that is generated, the revenue that is derived by programs. Most of this is from football. But this is kind of hard to imagine. It. Texas, they generate $156.1 million in athletic department revenue. Most of that is football, but that is a stunning figure. Second on that list is Georgia at $123.1 million. Then you got Michigan at number four is Notre Dame, at five Ohio State. Number seven is Auburn at $95.2 million. Which is more than Alabama. That surprises me, too. Alabama's at $94.6 million generated. LSU comes in at number 11 with $92 million, and Tennessee is number 12 at $91 million in revenue generated by the athletic department. Florida is 14 at $84.8 million, and then you've got 17 Arkansas, 19 Texas A&M, 23 South Carolina. And by the way, these are Power 5 schools that I'm comparing them to. The worst in the SEC is Vanderbilt. Out of the 65 Power 5 schools, Vanderbilt's revenue generated comes in 62nd at $32.1 million. But anyway, that's a lot of money that's generated. And again, the majority of that comes from football. And certainly, hopefully, we'll have a football season, or it could have a negative impact on not just college athletics, but a lot of businesses as well.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question. And again, this you put into the big category is there are things that allow you to be optimistic about once we get past a certain point at this point in time that things can remain where they've been scheduled and have not seen any adjustments to their preseason work or anything along those lines. But also, you just know that there's a moving target. It's a very fluid situation, mm-hmm. and you just don't know what's coming around that next bend. But I just, uh, I I don't know that there'd be any reason to start questioning whether or not there would be college football at this stage of the calendar, since we are still in March.
Yeah, I think it's premature to do that. We just have to see. We're dealing with something we have never dealt with before, and nobody really knows the answer. I was just reading this article the other day about how, well, there's been a lot of people say the hot weather will curtail some of this with the virus, but another doctor says we don't know that. That's a projection. That's a guesswork, because you have flu-like symptoms with it. But he said, with this virus, we just don't know. So the point is, to me, based on the things I've read and getting these conflicting reports, nobody really knows for sure. Therefore, I'm not sure what purpose it serves to project that we won't have college football or the NFL or any other sports down the road. We just have to wait and see.
That we do. We'll get a break. When we return, we look forward to catching up with our good friend, Dr. Jerry Punch. That's next. To join us on Sports Talk, if you have a question or comment for Doc, 656-9900, 656-9900. Star 990 is free for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. The toll-free number, 1-866-656-9900. This is Sports Talk. Sports Talk continues. I'm John Wilkerson with Jimmy Hyams, and joining us now via the Stanley Fence and Gates Hotline is our good friend Dr. Jerry Punch. His appearance brought to you by New Balance Knoxville. Doc, how are you?
I'm good, guys. I've been out using my New Balances, as have many of my neighbors here, out getting a walk. Even it's a bit overcast, but just a good time to be out and maintain the social distance, but to get a little exercise. Hope you guys are doing well.
Yeah, Doc, can't underscore enough just the importance of a routine at this point in time, because there remain so many unanswered questions for so many. But if you give yourself something that you look forward to from one day to the next, 1 hour to the next, that can just give you quite the lift.
It really can. And, you know, I've heard, you know, you've heard from all different sources on radio and television, doctors and people who, politicians and infectious disease, you know, specialists, et cetera, economists. But I think the psychologists are saying just that it's important at this point in time when you are quarantined or self-quarantined or trying to stay in and trying to abide by everything to try to minimize spread, and so that we can get this beyond us, behind us, and we all believe that will indeed happen. It is important to be able to get out, get some fresh air, get in a routine, exercise, do what you can. And if you can take that with a loved one, son, daughter, wife, family, parents, grandparents, it's even better. You get a chance to connect, and you all get a chance to relax and get a little fresh air. But you do that almost daily, or just have some time to be able to sit outside in a chair and relax.
Doc, I know, like many of us, you're right there in the middle of just looking at the numbers as they go locally, within the state, across the nation, around the world. What are your impressions right now of this battle we're in?
Well, obviously, we're all concerned, and our prayers go out to those that are in the middle of those terrible hotspots. So, where the infection and the serious infections and complications of such in and around New York, the state of New York, New York City, New Jersey, Connecticut, California, or Washington, now Oregon. Those are areas, that in epidemiologists are saying, well, they have a lot in common in terms of density of population, the weather conditions, cold weather, unfortunately, things don't seem to be getting it. There are some, obviously, some of those combo drug treatments that seem to be working, which is the good news. The bad news is there's still a lot of people infected, and spread is difficult to control. And, if you listen to people and the people I've talked to in New York who are friends of mine, they say the horrible thing about it, the tough thing about it, is that you want to abide by social distancing, but in order to get to your 22nd floor apartment, and there may be one or two elevators at most running, you have to get into an elevator. And even though the signs say no more than four or five in an elevator, there's 20 people waiting for that elevator, and everyone jams on it, and you either stand there a while or you don't get to your apartment. And that's the sad part. So social distancing is very difficult in a lot of those places. But and then there's other parts of the country, as we have noted. Thankfully, we are one of those in Tennessee where we are seeing, you know, not that many cases. Of course, one's too many, but and we are controlling that with our own personal discipline. Everyone doing their part. Texas, where probably 2/3 of the state does not have a single case. Iowa, some of the states where you don't have to worry about density of population, and those areas are still doing their part, which we all should. And I think that's hopefully down the road, those areas, the Tennessees and Texases and the Iowas and some of the states, maybe even North Carolina and others, will be among the first states that can sort of get back to some semblance of work, hotels and restaurants, et cetera, to get the economy surging again after we get through these, what people are concerned about being the next couple of weeks. Let's certainly hope so.
Doc, do you think that NASCAR could potentially have a race May the 9th in Martinsville?
Well, I just text the people at Martinsville that are friends of mine, and I think that they're, you know, obviously they're waiting and watching and looking, and they want to abide by whatever the parameters are. It not only involves the sanctioning body of NASCAR, it primarily involves what's going on in the state of Virginia, you know, what the governor wants to do there, what the governor, you know, and the governors in North Carolina for people who would pass through in Kentucky, et cetera, to pass through those states to get to Martinsville, Virginia for that event. I think ideally that's still, pulling up all the information, it's still being listed, Jimmy, as the first race back, you know, mm-hmm. May the 9th at Martinsville, Virginia. And if that were the case, that would mean that the 7 NASCAR races prior to that have been postponed. And the key word is postponed, not canceled. So the people who wanted to go to Atlanta or Homestead or Texas or Bristol or Richmond or Talladega or Dover are still going to be able to see those races. That's the hope. NASCAR has told their car owners, and I have spoken with several of the major car owners, and they said they have been told that the NASCAR wants to run all 36 races, which means that once we are clear, they could run races. They could run Wednesday night events, prime time on television. Of course, television will have some input as to what time that event starts, but that could be a Wednesday night prime time show. There could be double headers on Saturdays and Sundays. Could be a lot of activity. And right now, as far as NASCAR is concerned, that is the first race listed on May 9th. Now, IndyCar is listing May 30th and 31st as their first race back, and that would be the Chevrolet Detroit Grand Prix doubleheader at Belle Isle, which is right on the island right between Detroit and Canada, right there in the river. So that's what they're listing as their first race back, is that doubleheader weekend in Detroit.
Jimmie Johnson was to run online in an IndyCar race, and I wonder, with that comes a speculation that maybe he's going to hop into an IndyCar after he retires from NASCAR. Do you see him doing that?
Well, it's interesting. You know, I think Jimmy's a talented driver, and given all he's accomplished in his career, why wouldn't you? Now, I don't know if I were him that I would want to jump into an IndyCar oval at 240 miles an hour where the risks are significant. But I think, you know, a lot of the races are run on road course, on street courses, I think that with some testing done. Now, Jimmy, I watched the iRacing event he did at Watkins Glen, and, you know, I'm not sure what kind of rig he had. A lot of it has to do with the kind of rig you're racing in from your home studio or whatever, but he was respectable. He got, I think, started 19th, got up to 13th, and was moving around toward the top 10. But it's a whole different animal, obviously. Those iRacing rigs, you can't really adjust the setup on the car, and you've got to adapt in terms of torque and turning. I think it would take a lot of the drivers who said that are former IndyCar drivers or accomplished winners said getting on the iRacing is a lot more difficult than it is to actually drive the car. And one guy said, I think Paul Tracy said, I got on the iRacing and just tested it myself, and then once I got to racetrack, it was so much easier. But considering all that, I thought Jimmy Johnson did a pretty good job. And, Jimmy, to answer your question, that consideration may be more to the point that it is speculation, because they announced that the road race in Indianapolis would be held on July 4th this year. The one that was supposed to be the Grand Prix of Indianapolis was scheduled for the first week of May, has now been moved to Saturday, July 4th. And that's the NASCAR weekend for the Brickyard. So what they're going to do is they're going to run three races at Indianapolis Motor Speedway. On Saturday, July 4th, they'll run the IndyCar Grand Prix. That'll be followed on the road course by a 150-mile NASCAR Xfinity race. And then on Sunday, the very next day, they'll run the Brickyard 400 on the oval, 2.5-mile oval at Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Well, now people are saying, could one driver run all three? I mean, talk about putting their names in the record books in Indianapolis. Wow. Could there be one driver? Would it be Jimmy Johnson? Would it be Kyle Busch? Would it be Kurt Busch? Would Tony Stewart come back out and run all three? There's lots of speculation now as to what may happen. Somebody's going to want to run them all, and there's some pretty good candidates in that group.
Is there a considerable skill differential between an IndyCar driver and a NASCAR driver?
Well, I think I don't know if it's skill or just what you're accustomed to. There's a tremendous, you know, being a race car driver, the seat of the pants technology, the feel of the car, the hand-eye coordination, the reaction time, all those things that you can adapt and you work to get better and better. But it's a different kind of skill. I wouldn't say it's more skill for IndyCar or less. Typically, the stock cars require more physical stamina. Back when we had drivers who ran the Indy 500 and the World 600 on the same day, I remember numerous times talking with the late John Andretti, and John ran the Indy 500 and ran in the top 10 all day long. In fact, I think he had a great run and finished either fifth or sixth or seventh, somewhere along there. I interviewed him when the race was over, and he was hustling to get over to get on a helicopter to get to an airport to get to Charlotte to run 600 miles that night. He said, the Indy 500 is mentally challenging because at those speeds, you're turning the steering wheel an inch and a half or 2 inches. If you turn it an inch and three-fourths, you could end up being a little greasy spot on the wall, to use his words. So it's mentally, you have to be totally focused. Traffic, things that are happening that you've got to be aware of, you know, for that race. And then you go to a Charlotte, and the steering wheel feels like it goes so sloppy, you got to turn it and turn it and turn it to get the car to turn. But it's physically demanding for 600 miles. You're in the car and you're worn out and you're dehydrated. So guys have done it. I mean, Tony Stewart was about to drop because of dehydration and exhaustion. But he and John Andretti and others, I think Robbie Gordon, they've all attempted it. And but it's a different animal, stock car racing versus Indy cars.
Our guest, Dr. Jerry Punch, his appearance brought to you by New Balance Knoxville. We'll get a break and be back with a final segment of this first hour of the program as you listen to 99.1 The Sports Animal.
99.1 The Sports Animal. It sounds just as good on your car radio as it does while you're working. 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Final segment to this first hour of Sports Talk with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. And Doc, over the weekend, or I should say within the last week, one of the things that my wife and I like to do one year to the next is we like to see all of the pictures that are nominated for Best Picture for the Academy Awards, and saw last weekend, not this past one, but the weekend before, saw Ford versus Ferrari. And I'm just wondering if you had seen that, familiar with the story, and your thoughts on what was a pretty incredible tale.
Yeah, I have seen it, and I like the movie. Typically most racing movies are a little too much Hollywood, but the people, and I was around Carroll Shelby some early in my career in radio and television, and got to be around him and had a chance to, you know, be at his race shops out in California a little bit. Just an incredible genius, competitor, innovator. And I think that I obviously wasn't around when that was happening, when the actual story of them building the Ford to be able to go battle the Ferraris, you know, in Europe. But the people that I've spoken with say that probably 70-80% of what was in the movie was accurate. There were some things in the movie they thought were inaccurate. They would never thought that the president of Ford would be crying or would be, you know, that giddy. But he was emotional when he saw what had happened and how it happened. There were some Hollywood license taken with some of the other things here and there. But by and large, they kept true to form with some of the things – they did. I thought it was well done. You know, here's the thing. You know, the best thing that can be said about that movie is you don't have to be a racing fan or know anything about racing or anything about Fords or Ferraris or Le Mans or anything. If you just want to be entertained, you know, pretty good acting, a great storyline, you can go and your family, your wife, your kids can all enjoy it. And I thought that was the best part. I looked around and watched the theater, and there were people who probably weren't big race fans or knew very much about the sport of motorsports, and seemed to be enjoying the movie.
Yeah, I thought it was very well done. And, of course, you're leading with Matt Damon and Christian Bale, so I thought it was well cast. But I just wanted to get your thoughts on that. And, Doc, as we were talking about, Jimmy mentioned during News and Notes, the NCAA Division I Council is set to meet this afternoon. In fact, I think the conversation is going to get started here in just a few minutes about the eligibility for spring sport athletes, whether or not to give seniors an additional year of eligibility. Some think it should be the senior class. Others, and I think there's an argument for every member, all classes, whether it be juniors, sophomores, freshmen. But I also think the deeper you get down that path, the more difficulty you create, because what you have is a loop, especially for a sport like baseball that is very rigid, and it's 11.7 scholarships. That's all you get. How long would you have an allowance to exceed that? And also, a lot of schools would be very interested in the aid, since that is also a sport that has partial scholarships, as others do. You then look, okay, here's somebody who's on a 25% ride. Well, what do you do, and how do they qualify for books? How do they qualify for housing? How do they qualify for meals? I really think that it does seem cut and dried. You lost a season, you get that season back, but I also think we're looking at something that could be as long as a four-year window to make sure that if indeed one class gets this fair opportunity, that all classes get that fair opportunity.
Yeah, and that's going to be, and I couldn't agree more. That's going to be such a difficult decision, and I would love to be in that room and be a fly on the wall listening to the debate. I know that, you know, it's obvious to me maybe, and maybe I'm looking at this the wrong way, that the seniors should deserve another shot. People in the spring sports got robbed, didn't get an opportunity, none of their own doing, none of their own fault. They should have the eligibility to be able to come back and play. But how do you discriminate between a senior or a junior that they may have lost this year, or a sophomore, or whatever? And then again, you got the financial implications of how do you fund if you do that, and you've already got people you've recruited, they're going to come in and get a 25% scholarship, someone's coming to get meals, or someone's going to get laundry and books. I mean, how do you separate that? And then how do the schools who have been financially strapped, because suddenly the windfalls income from they've gotten from the NCAA basketball tournament or from college football may have been affected. Hopefully it will not be affected. But, you know, I'm not sure how I would do that. I think that it's very difficult whether you allow the seniors carte blanche, and then do you go to the schools individually and say, okay, we're going to give you X number of recertifications or eligibilities, and you dole them out yourself based on, and maybe that gives the school some input, coaches some input as to how they do that. Then again, could there be inequity there? There could be. It's going to be a difficult decision. But gosh, I hate to see so many people that didn't get a chance to have a senior season and have worked so hard and so long, just like the Olympic athletes, but have worked so hard and so long and yet get it taken away, because it certainly could impact them and their career, you know, for years and years to come.
And Jimmy, I don't think there's also any question that there has been some chatter about, well, today maybe the best move for them to do is to come back and say, why don't we table this discussion until June? Well, if things move forward, if there is a draft for Major League Baseball, and if we see baseball get started at the pro level, then coaches aren't going to know exactly what landscape they're dealing with. So I don't know that pushing it back, while you would love a little bit of extra time to just let it all sink in and be able to explore and talk with as many necessary parties as possible, I don't know that pushing it down the road is going to be anything that alleviates any of the questions that do need to be answered, don't you think?
I think you need to get an answer as soon as you can. Look, if you want to delay it, okay, delay it till April 15. But delaying it that long is going to create issues about whether players want to go ahead and turn pro or what their future is going to be, how they're going to deal with that. I think the sooner the better. I could see an argument where it's too soon today, but you could say, hey, we are going to do this, and we're going to come up with a definitive plan in a couple of weeks. But I think waiting until June is too long.
And John, I agree. I just think one quick, I just add the fact that the NCAA has been reactive for so long, and this is one of the cases where it is imperative they be proactive for the benefit of the coaches and the athletes.
That's Dr. Jerry Punch. His appearance brought to you by New Balance Knoxville. I'm John Wilkerson with Jimmy Hyams. We have more with Doc coming up. Hour number two of Sports Talk is next on 99.1 The Sports Animal.